Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 152. I'm your host, John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about blockchain games. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In this episode, I'm talking to Manish Agarwal, who is the co-founder at Kratos Studios. So Kratos has been around for about a year now. It raised $20 million at the start of 2023, and also in that process acquired IndieGG, which was the sub-DAO, the Indian sub-DAO of Yield Guild Gaming, YGG. So in the episode, we talk quite a lot about what Kratos has been doing in the last year, how it's been building out a large community of gamers in India, how it's been onboarding both Web3 and Web2 game publishers into that community, and why it thinks blockchain is really important to now build these communities and solve some of the problems that game publishers have in finding communities for any sorts of games. But we also talk about how Kratos isn't limiting itself to India and how it's also looking to become a global force in the promotion of games and blockchain games in particular. So hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to subscribe and see you next time. And very pleased today for this episode of the podcast. I'm joined by Manish, who is the founder of Kratos Games. How's it going, Manish?
All well, John. Good to see you. And lovely good. To see you in your blockchain avatar. We have been interacting in Web2 for a decade or more.
Yes, we have. We've known each other for a while. So it's always good to get a sort of a bit of background on the person who's, you know, who's going to be talking about what they're up to in the blockchain game space. So you've been around for a while. As you say, we first met at least a decade ago. And you've done many, many cool things. So give us the potted history of sort of Manish in games and how you've ended up in blockchain.
John, gaming started with me around pretty much 2010-11. And then that's the time in 2012 we met for the first time at Pocket Gamer London. This was a freemium, start of freemium in gaming, and then I was running a studio called Reliance Games. It was the first studio from India to build freemium games and build for Western markets from India. And yeah, it was a beautiful, exhilarating journey of building something new, which building something which isn't been there existing, not too many precedences. And thanks to friends like you, who brought together a lot many people from whom each one of us could learn. And I think that's the ethos of the gaming industry, which has always been there, that everybody is happy to share what they are doing, what they are learning, what mistakes they've made, and how could they really do it. So yes, did that, and then ran it very successfully, then moved to the second gig in gaming, Nazara, which I ran it for 7.5 years. Took it to public in India. It's the only listed gaming company. Took it in public in 21. Took beautiful bets on esports, on very interactive learning content. It's been, again, the second phase of adjacency to games. And how does the game studios, large studios, build grassroots communities? How does a publisher really think? So learn that. And then 21, I really kind of got completely smitten, if I would use the word, by the promise of a community economic value sharing model and enabled by blockchain. And I think that intuitively from first principle appeals to me as an individual, because I've been in an internet since many, many years, almost 17 years, 18 years. And internet was supposed to create a democratic distribution of opinion and wealth. And I think I thought, let me give it one try before I kind of really say that I'm building something which can truly create democratic distribution of economic value and the governance value. So that's what I got into, wrote this thesis, founded Kratos Studio, published white paper in August 22. And since then, we have been building. So yeah, again, cycle starts. You kind of get into doing something which is unknown. You kind of jump out of plane without a parachute and you figure it out. that on the way you will find some fellow jumpers and together you'll land. I don't know whether you will land in the place where you started to land and thought about landing, but you will land somewhere.
Yeah. That's the interesting journey, isn't it? And it was sort of interesting there, as you said, you know, you worked for these two big free-to-play mobile developer publishers in India. So you sort of, you were there for that part of the journey. And it's interesting there, you were mentioning sort of, even then you're sort of thinking about grassroots communities. So I guess, as you said, that's why the blockchain thing sort of really, really appealed. And that's with Kratos, that's really, you know, would you say that's your main focus really? Because I guess a bit of background, Kratos was sort of, you created that and then you've sort of acquired the Indie GG sort of sub DAO, the YGG, Guild Games, Indian sub DAO is called Indie GG, and you sort of acquired them. That was how Kratos sort of was announced, wasn't it? So, I guess I'd dig into that a little bit. So why did you think that was a good move? Why was Indie GG, which had only been going for maybe about a year when you bought them, I think, or maybe even less?
Yeah, so I think I was at the Canvas stage. I'd met Gabby in 21 and Sandeep.
Yeah,
and I was very new, but what Gabby was doing was really creating huge amount of micro entrepreneurs in Philippines, and that was kind of fascinating. But when I kind of really looked a little more, I said this can only be possible when the underlying games are not, they need to be designed differently. They can't be designed from a from a very premium game point of view. They need to be a freemium game. And people like us who have been around for many long, they know that what freemium did to the overall gaming industry as a business model versus premium. So it was very quickly I understood that the underlying games will have a shorter, or business model of NFT gating would have a shorter shelf life. And Scholar model on top of it will become a limiting factor at some point of time. And IndieGG, Sandeep from Polygon, his close friend, and he kind of said, we want to launch SubDAO. My view was that we need to really figure out what does IndieGG stand for and what we'd like to do rather than just doing it. Mm-hmm. But I think I have learned now that bull market, people don't listen, right?
It's good learning.
Yeah. So the rational thinking versus the whole exuberance and irrational optimism, really kind of the animal spirits take thing. And then IndieGG was launched. And I was also an angel investor because it was cost of learning for me for multiple things. So for me, the thesis of Scholar is not a large pool, and one needs to really think beyond. And that's where I said, while we need to really think from first principles, what needs to be done. And that's how the Kratos thinking really came around. The important thing, which I have learned over my 15 years of experience, is you kind of really work with people together, because when you're trying to build an ecosystem, that ecosystem will have multiple avatars. And it'll keep evolving. And to me, a learning which Gabby has, Sandeep has, and what they have gone through is priceless. And that partnership is important. And that partnership really made me acquire IndieGG, because the business model I was very clear is broken, and we are not pursuing that business model. We were kind of really charting our own course, but it's about the set of people whom you are getting that chance to build together, and you are building for next 30 years. It's importance of really having access to those first principle discussions, experiences, and through them more honing and of the thinking and evolving is important. So that's why Kratos shook hands with Gabby and Sandeep, and we formed. In fact, we are on a path to really kind of have one global, because we started with India, now we are a truly global communities. So there'll be only Kredos Gaming Network as a brand, and in DGG we are migrating from India also, right?
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I guess maybe unpick that a little bit. So Gabby was the one of the three co-founders of YGG, and really, sort of kickstarted, was the visionary behind the whole sort of scholarship model, which was, but I guess unfortunately that was very attached to Axie Infinity. So I guess there was a period of maybe 3 months when that sort of worked, and then sort of all these DAOs started out, and some of them were profitable, and some of them maybe less so, and but then, because they were so attached to that one single game, and in fact sort of grew that game very, as big as it got. But then obviously when the sort of when the economics wasn't so sustainable, then everyone sort of had a problem that that model didn't work anymore. And I guess what we've seen really in the 2 years since then is sort of different sort of guilds or DAOs, whatever they are, sort of working out what their niche is. And I guess that's, what you've been doing. I mean, obviously, you're based in India, and a lot of our probably discussion will be about the Indian market. Now, how much of this do you think is at the moment specific to the Indian market, and how much, because you say there you're sort of like looking to, the IndieGG brand is sort of going away, and Kratos is the global brand. So obviously, you're looking outside India as well. So how do you sort of balance those two things? Because obviously, the Indian market extremely well. It's obviously a fast-growing market with loads of, millions and millions of people in it, one point, whatever you are, 1.2 billion people. So obviously that's a great market for you guys to have sort of competitive advantage. But obviously you are looking globally as well, so that's sort of interesting.
So John, for us, if you look at the gaming markets around the world, there are markets which are mature, which will give you 5-6% annual growth. And then there are markets which are going to be your turbo growth drivers. India, Indonesia, Middle East, Brazil, Turkey, Egypt, Africa, these are the markets where I think the next decade of gaming growth is going to happen, right? We've been there. I know that these markets, you need to have a very strong local community grassroots presence. You need to have a local statutory understanding. You need to have local the local connect in terms of consumer behavior is nuanced. And the global publishers are reluctant to kind of put boot on ground. And that's where building these markets distribution platform where the global publishers could really kind of get access to local communities is what we are going after. In my previous experience, I've worked extensively in Middle East, Africa, India, Southeast Asia. So understanding of consumers and the navigating the system is what is important. Now, as a publisher, you need communities, you need local payments, and you need local statutory compliance. If you could really kind of give all of these three things very easily, and we are saying that that's a very traditional publisher look. Now you flip the whole model on its head and say that gamer and the publishers, there is an economic value exchange happening between the two. And you are kind of really having a gamer-first platform where they are engaging with the offerings which they love to have fun. And those offerings are also useful for publisher to engage with new gamers or to increase their sales. That's the platform we are building. So think of it. Think of it as a very simple publisher in the local markets, which is kind of really building a decentralized publishing models, and which is where the blockchain really comes handy.
And I guess it was interesting there where you sort of saying you think for a lot of these local markets, sort of the game publishers are, even though these are sort of big markets in terms of population, you're sort of suggesting there that game publishers are actually not very good at engaging with those markets in many aspects, and a sort of a blockchain-based sort of community you think is going to have the advantage to sort of fill that gap.
Absolutely. And the reason is very simple. The desire, I think it's a very primal trifecta, which we believe is there is an earning, there is a fame, and there is power. That earning, fame, power, drives the entire engagement retention of gamers. And if you are able to build levers for them to enjoy all these three things, you would be able to kind of create a very sticky, highly engaged community, which is of use to global publishers, right? Now, the governance helps in achieving the power. A sharing of transparent value that game gets great user acquisition, which is an effective ROI, is better than Facebook, Google, or anyone, and the gamer makes money, great. Fame, you can really create a lot of fame loops through hyperlocal, grassroots, decentralized tournaments really happening, or anything kind of the cool factor, cool X factor, which you can give for my clan and clan chiefs. That's the model which we have gone through. And in these markets are still very looking for fame, highly, you would say that, you know, there's so much of people vying for the same opportunity that if you, even if you get 2 seconds of fame, you feel happy, right? And that 2 seconds of fame doesn't need to be at a super national level or international level. It's an aspirational pyramid. But even if I get famous in my college or in my community, it's great. So that's the true insight which we are really working, that a combination, it's no silver bullet that you need instant gratification, you need future speculation, you need fame, you need power. Combination of this, think of it as a cocktail which you are providing to your community and which is beneficial for the publishers.
And I guess the strength of that is obviously earning is part of that, but backed up by fame and power. You're not reliant on earnings in the way that sort of Axie just had the earnings for a bit, but there wasn't any of the other thing stuff around it. So when the earnings went away, everyone was like, not really.
Actually, if you look at the larger problem, which it was there, it was an extractive, the community. Community was just taking the money out. And in our model, what we are seeing is community is a gamer community. And gamers, if there is an asset ownership, they will love to purchase. So there is, it's a circular loop which you're creating, enabled by the asset ownership and P2P marketplaces, which make these guys to not think as an spend, but think as an investment, right? And that is what is going to really be a game changer for these markets, because the friction of spending, which was always there at the back of mind, is now being replaced by an investment in future value creation.
So I guess that's sort of some of the sort of you know, your first principles you've been thinking of while you've got into this market. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, over the last year, what stuff you've been doing? Because you've been quite active in the Indian market with events and things like that. So it'd be good for you to sort of put a bit of flesh on the bone of that and tell us sort of how you're actually building this stuff out.
So very happy with what the Kratos extended family, IndieGG extended family. We started with few of us. Now today we have a 1.2 million gamer family, which is really, really kind of run by 14,000 clan chiefs on our platform.
Okay.
And since we started in India, we have an advantage, not advantage, numbers are more in terms of number of cities. We have on ground 168 cities where we have clan chiefs, right? Now, organically, we started getting clan chiefs from Bangladesh, from Nigeria, from Egypt, from Turkey. Now we have expanded Brazil. There's a local team in Brazil. So the Kratos family has really kind of grown big. And all of this has happened purely through zero consumer acquisition costs. And this is completely community-led approach, which is what in Web3, India's me, India's you, India's anyone. And we have been really kind of walking the talk by distributing almost more than $1 million of income to the community earned from game publishers in a very transparent manner, right? So from that perspective, walking the talk of saying that economic value sharing is happening with the gamers. And as a result, our game publishers are very happy because we have created a product which is called Gamified Quest or Gamified Progression Quest. And you are not paying for a download or registration or top of the funnel. Your actually gamer is coming and playing. And the more they play, the more they rank on leaderboard, and the higher they rank, the more money they can make. So the game really is paying for very high engagement, and it is not paying for just downloading a game, which is the core issue, which is the problem statement in Web 2, that a Facebook Google spend only gives you a top of the funnel. Then any kind of progression risk is of the publisher. And that really creates huge amount of mortality for young game developers. And for large studios, that becomes a stupid LTV CAC ratio, keeps on getting worsening, right? So for us, solving and creating that product of that gamers love, publishers feel ROI at scale is what we have been able to deliver through a product tech platform. Like, for example, John, at any month now we are delivering upwards of 100,000 quests, right? So scale is really, really large. At any point of time in a month, we have 20 to 21 game publishers wanting to access this community. We have worked more than 150 game publishers in last 12, 14 months. And the good thing is it's not just Web3 games which are coming to us. Even Web2 games have started to come, right? For example, Valorant wanted to really look at how to build grassroots communities in India. And they realized after working with us, the clans are new cafes. Because in cafe, people go to just hang with their friends. And now clans are nothing but friends coming together to form a clan, and clans are new cafes. And they loved it. And this year, we are going to really deepen our relationship on that.
That's the question I was going to ask. I was going to say, presumably, these are not all Web3 games, because while there's a sort of like, I guess, a conceptual synergy that Web3 games hopefully should understand this in a sort of maybe deeper way. But in a sense, you don't really care. What you care is good product coming in that's going to, you know, be able to give you the money that you can pass on to these communities. And your platform, I presume, means you can plug in any experience. It doesn't need to be a Web3 experience. You can plug anything into those leaderboards. And then,
Our thinking is very simple. This whole Web 2, Web 3 is what all of us keep talking in boardroom. A gamer really doesn't make a difference in Web 2, Web 3. They are coming to play good games. If you give them shitty game, they'll say fuck off, right? You need to give good games. You need to have games which they can play with their friends. Whether it's a Web 2, Web 3 doesn't matter. Now the Web 3 layer comes slightly later in the game. When they've already kind of engaged, when they love it, then they are saying, okay, aha, there is an opportunity for me to own an asset which I can really have a marketplace within a game or outside I can sell. But that journey, let them do it. And that's what our belief is. When a gamer doesn't give a difference between Web 2, Web 3, our platform, why should it? Our Web 2 games have the same problem statement of LTV CAC, and Web 3 games have the same problem statement of LTV CAC. So your problem statements are same as publishers. Your gamers are not worried about Web 2, Web 3. For us, blockchain is being used to build our trust, immutable reputation on chain. And you will see before GDC, we launching our own reputation cards, which we are very excited. Today, in 1 year, we have got, for these 1.2 million gamers, we have almost got 20 million attributes. These are first party attributes. So we want to really kind of build Kratos as the oracle, as one source of truth for gamers to see their reputation and for publishers to look at their reputation.
Because I guess that's the other interesting sort of bit. As you build out this platform, get more users, more publishers coming into it, value exchange. You know, where does sort of Kratos go? Does it, because I guess the original sort of idea for guilds was, they even had their own tokens. They actually had their own NFTs. You could imagine them at certain points. Some of them wanted to launch their own games. You know, there's lots of things. I guess one of the problems with blockchain, I think, is there's so many things you could do that people often get very excited about. Oh, I could do all these sort of things. But actually then that operationally means you're sort of very diluted and probably some of the basic stuff doesn't get done. So obviously you're fairly early in the journey of the company at the moment. How much of that other stuff, tokens and NFTs and doing your own games, is that something you think is part of the where you're going to land, or is that just something that you think is irrelevant at the moment?
No, I think it's very relevant from a game publisher point of view, because ultimately they pay salaries and they need to generate revenues.
Yeah.
So I always believe that if we are going to be really adding value in the ecosystem, and one thing which I always tell my team, if tomorrow Kratos were not to exist, will publishers miss us? Will the gamers miss us? And publishers will miss us only if we are able to kind of generate revenues and reduce their costs and create a better ROI. So in my view, it is important for the community to really also spend on games. And that's why we are launching our own Kratos store, which is a marketplace where game publishers can give us their NFT APIs and we can integrate. And we have enabled on-ramp capabilities from fiat as well as crypto so that community can make purchases. That's something you will see in next 4 weeks. It will be launched. So from our perspective, there are two big things we are building. We are building gamer and publisher engagement platform and Kratos store. These are the two things which will ensure that there is a circular economy loop of the community earning money and spending money, and publishers giving money to the community and taking money from the community. So that's what we are going to really do. The heart of this operation is clean data rooms based on attributes, which again, gamers own it, we don't own it. So we have created a very first principle thinking that what are the rights which a gamer has and to show the data, where to show, whom to show, how to show. And that's how we are building our own database. And last thing, but not the least, if you were to kind of zoom out in this engagement platform, gamers are doing activities for which they'll get rewarded, and they'll get rewarded on a transaction currency on Kratos called Kratos Cash, which will ultimately will have a swap with the listed token whenever we have, which will be KGen. So that's what we are really kind of building.
Ambitious.
Yeah, so that's what we have been building. And 23 was a beautiful year where we were kind of just sitting down and building. And the good thing about the winters is that you don't get distracted. You don't have too many people knocking on your door. And we had raised money in 22 from some of the marquee investors. So we are very frugal in our approach. So just without getting any disturbed, without getting distracted, just build. And now lots of those puzzle pieces are coming together in 24 to start seeing the tokenomics really playing out on the platform.
No, I think that's one of the advantage of particularly a community sort of thing. A lot of it is based around, you know, what numbers have you got? And you know, if you've managed to get whatever million users in a year where people are not talking particularly about crypto or blockchain gaming, and then you sort of add in the sort of the tailwinds we get in a bit more of a sort of speculative market, then you're in a, you know, anyone's in a very strong position for that. You've built out the stuff you wanted to build out without lots of people sort of distracting you with other opportunities.
Exactly. I'm very happy that I've not received calls from so-called market makers, so-called shillers, so-called influencers, because. And also, again, I'm not a first time, like I've built things. So to me, I've seen many times the springs and winters. It's not the first time. So and the 13 years of experience on saying that what is really going to really make you valuable for your stakeholders is so important. And I think that's where. A lot of people complain about winter. I didn't.
Cool. While you're here, I think you know, India is an interesting market. So although you're sort of looking at other places as well, I think it would be foolish not to ask you a bit more detail about the Indian market. So from someone sort of interested looking on the outside, I don't really have any detailed knowledge at all. And it seems like maybe sometimes some quite contradictory things. But it seems like the Indian market is sort of quite open to sort of blockchain and sort of, I would say it seems like there's a good chunk of people there who are sort of quite into that sort of stuff. But it seems that on a government level, there's sort of, you know, less inviting than maybe it has been in the past. How do you see, you know, the Indian market over the next sort of 5 to 10 years? Because obviously India is now probably the biggest population in the world, so that's always a nice sort of a market to be looking at.
So John, I'll break it down in three parts. One, India is a market where if you are creating a high quality game, global communities, you will get rewarded for sure. Mm. Right. And with the per capita income increasing, with the economy, the way we are growing and one of the fastest at such large pace, the disposable income will continue to grow and in-app purchases will continue to happen. So just very simple, forget about NFT driven sales or crypto driven sales, pure consumer spend on gaming will continue to happen. You need to really be having a good quality game and then kind of really be a little patient, because we are in that per capita income increase cycle. So if we expect ARPUs of US or Japan or China or Korea to be delivered today, no, it will not happen. But if you want to really kind of build your own ecosystem and brand for next 4 or 5 years, you will be rewarded completely at a much higher premium than anybody else, which is going to happen. The second thing, the crypto, I think, is an inherent. You have seen what in real money gaming, the growth of India, which happened in last 5-6 years. Mm. So from that perspective, the people wanting to put their time and skill to kind of make money, I think it's no brainer. And which is where it's not an issue of when will the framework happen, but the government will come out with frameworks, which will kind of really create this perception of dealing with tokens, dealing with NFTs, is something which will kind of become mainstream. The way real money, and real money took its own 7-8 years, initial 2-3 years to kind of really 4 years to happen, and then it took off, and the same thing is really going to happen. So I don't, and with the technology and the perception on technology and crypto being a global boundaryless system, I think the framework will happen sooner than later, right? And then the third piece is that if you were to look at from an India market point of view, and entertainment-based games meeting the promise of asset ownership and learning opens a large set of 400 million gamers which are not part of real money. Real money still is a 100 million gamer base. But there is a larger base of people which are playing those games. Okay. That audience is completely outside the purview of RMG. And that is the audience which will come into the main fold, which will play it for the fun, for the competitiveness, for the all of it. Plus, will have an element of saying that I can make money. That is where it's super exciting. And that's true for markets which I articulated, India and then Indonesia and then Brazil and all of these markets.
Mm, okay. All right. So actually, you think a lot of the sort of trends that you're seeing specifically in India are actually going to be reflected more broadly across those sort of
correct
countries as well. Obviously, everyone has their own particular, you know.
The government part is going to be particular for each country. Some governments will form rules sooner, some later. But I think it's the force of nature of adoption of crypto frameworks is really going to happen.
It's a question to end on. Is I guess we've had this for the last decade, and you know, the Indian mobile games market, you know, has sort of exploded, got a lot richer, deeper in terms of concepts and stuff. But it's still seen on the outside, and I guess it still is to a degree, a lot about cricket and sort of Bollywood. Is that still the case, or is that a very lazy outsider view that I'm peddling to you there?
Yeah, John, I think if you look at data, the cricket games or Bollywood games in India don't even come in top 20, top 25, whether by
really?
Okay. By volume or by value.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the, as you rightly said, the Western view, the lazy view, which has been around for 100 years, that India is land of snake charmers. And people continue to believe that the cows roam around everywhere. So I think in gaming, it's the same analogy, that if you want to capture India, go and make a Bollywood-based game or make a cricket-based game. No, that's not true. The number one games are the games which have amazing community, whether it's you have a shooting game happening or you have a RPG happening, or in terms of download, it needs to be a runner or a board game or a racer. So I think cricket has not been a game in top grossing. Miniclip did an amazing job of creating a cricket game, and that comes in top 20 grossing sometime, but the scale of grossing of that versus PUBG is very, very different. So I think just come and spend some real world is my always advice to people. And that's why we have IGDC, India Game Developer Conference. Come, participate, talk to people, roam around, go and meet. We have a consumer event now next door to IGDC where you can meet gamers. And a lot of game publishers will get their bearings right. And I'm glad that this year in November, we had 100 plus foreign publishers really coming and visiting their teams, which just shows that there is an appreciation of not doing an armchair strategy around India, but they really want to kind of figure out what is working and how is it working. So I think a great symbiosis of Indian developers making for globe will keep increasing, and global developers coming and understanding how to really build grassroots communities is going to happen here.
Good. Well, glad that I've educated myself and hopefully some of the audience about some of the lazy comparisons we often make. That was great. Manish, thanks for your time. It seems like you're building some really interesting stuff, so we'll keep our eye on what you're up to and your announcements later on in the quarter about that. But thanks for your time. Really good to chat again.
And thank you, John. Thanks for hosting me, and thanks to your audience.
Cool. Yes, and thanks to you for watching or listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every episode, we are talking to the people who are building out this new way of gaming and finding gamers and making communities and all this sort of cool stuff. I think 2024, I think we're all expecting it to be a very interesting year from that point of view. So please subscribe to the podcast and see who we're talking to next time. But thanks for listening to this one, and I'll see you again.